From Cherokee to Currituck, from the largest city to the smallest town, and from the state house to the schoolhouse, it's Carolina Journal Radio, your weekly news magazine discussing North Carolina's most important public policy events and issues.
Welcome to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. During the next hour, Donna Martinez and I will explore some major issues affecting our state. North Carolina has made billions of dollars of pension and health care promises to retired government workers. You'll learn why the state treasurer focuses on the price of all of those promises. Medicaid expansion dominates the health care debate in the General Assembly, but some leading Republican state senators propose an alternative. Members of the UNC System's Board of Governors continue to raise questions about rising tuition and fee costs. You'll hear highlights from their remarks. And we'll learn some tax principles policymakers ought to keep in mind as they consider ways to modernize the state's transportation funding. Those topics are just ahead, but first, Donna Martinez joins us, and she has the Carolina Journal headline.
The best way to attract jobs to North Carolina is the subject of ongoing debate. So is it a matter of offering special tax breaks and incentives for certain industries or companies, or is it about creating an attractive climate for business and families, a beacon for everyone to come to North Carolina? Two stories making news in our state are putting this question back in the spotlight. Rick Henderson is editor-in-chief of Carolina Journal. He joins us now. Carolina Journal has been reporting on a lot of issues about attracting business to North Carolina. And Rick joins us to talk a little bit about some of the specifics. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
All right. First of all, one story out of Winston-Salem is really good news for the Triad community. We've got a new business that is going to be operating. It's a major aircraft industry player. Tell us about it.
This is a group that's called MRO Holdings Incorporated. And this is their North American subsidiary of the main company, which is based in El Salvador. And what this company does is MRO, that is maintenance, repair, and overhaul of largely commercial aircraft. And they have been in business for a number of years. They're one of the biggest players in the world. And what they have done is they have come in and made an offer for the company known as North State Aviation, which operates the maintenance operations, the MRO operations at Smith Reynolds Airport in Winston-Salem. And this is a really good news for the Triad area, because North State Aviation had taken over what was left of the maintenance and repair crews who were formerly at Piedmont Airlines and then US Air, and have continued to keep some maintenance and repair operations going at Smith Reynolds, but the company itself has been in a lot of financial trouble. And this infusion of capital and management and expertise is going to be big news for the Triad, because it may mean that Smith Reynolds has the opportunity to become one of the largest MRO locations on the East Coast.
And it looks like there's several hundred jobs that are associated with this. And something very interesting, on top of the good news that a company wants to be here and it's a growing industry, they have not asked and have asked for, and they have not received any sort of government financial incentives to come here.
That's right. They did not get any sort of special deal to come here. The only thing that happened, from my understanding, was that there may have been some arrangement made with the owners of North State Aviation to get some debt forgiveness, because the company itself had reorganized under bankruptcy protection a couple of years ago. The people who were there lost their jobs. Some got hired back. But the company itself has been operating on a shoestring and barely making ends meet since it reorganized a couple of years back. And so MRO, in the process of purchasing, may be getting some debt forgiveness from some local agencies, but nothing in the lines of the sorts of incentives you would normally see, as in certain payments per job or certain sorts of free infrastructure or things like that. They're getting nothing like that at all. It's basically going to be a turnkey operation.
And Sam Heeb, who wrote a story about this for Carolina Journal at carolinajournal.com, was talking with the person who runs MRO Holdings, and Mr. Colgan essentially saying, look, we're not looking for handouts.
Right. That's right.
Kind of refreshing.
That is. It is. They are looking for locations to expand their operations, and Smith Reynolds is perfect for that. because, again, it was the primary maintenance, repair, and overhaul site for Piedmont Airlines until U.S. Air took over. And then it was a pretty big operation even so. My best friend from high school started as a maintenance trainer for Piedmont Airlines
back
when and works for North State now. And this is something that they're very excited about there, because there's going to be opportunities for higher paying jobs and more jobs there. And Mr. Colgan basically said, look, these are great bays. I mean, these are great places for us to repair aircraft. And because the number of commercial aircraft is going to be growing, but because you don't really have to build new planes to have serviceable and quite modern commercial airliners, a lot of these airliners are basically put in mothballs when they are not needed by specific airlines. Mm-hmm. And so you can simply bring them to a location, refurbish them completely, and keep them in the air for a long time. And so the demand for commercial aircraft is going to grow. But at the same time, the need for brand new ones is not that great. And so this will be an opportunity to simply rebuild these aircraft and do it right here in North Carolina and service PTI, which is a big general aviation airport, as well as a big commercial airport, but also other large airports all around the Southeast.
What's interesting, I think, Rick, is that when we hear this debate about how do we retain jobs, how do we attract new companies to North Carolina, many times you will hear people who support the idea of government incentives or government tax breaks say, well, it's not possible for us just to say, come here because this is a great state, because we've got great infrastructure, because we have an educated workforce, et cetera. They say companies won't come here. We've got to compete with other states and other communities that are offering incentives. This story out of Winston-Salem essentially says it can be done.
Yeah. And now, this is a very unusual situation, because you had an operating facility that had the capacity to handle someone who wanted to come in and make a new capital investment and infuse money and expertise there at Smith Reynolds. But by the same token, there are an awful lot of commercial and industrial sites around that could be either built or refurbished to handle new companies. And they did cite the fact that there was the workforce in place that was experienced, that there were low tax rates, that there was a good regulatory climate. Those were all important things. But when you combine that with infrastructure in place to make this happen, incentives would just simply have been throwing money at a problem that didn't exist. And so that's why so many of these incentives proposals really just don't stand up to much scrutiny once you really look at them.
Let's move over then to what's happening in Charlotte, specifically with the Charlotte Panthers. A fascinating discussion and debate is now playing out, having to do with the state of South Carolina wanting to try to attract the Carolina Panthers business operation out of Charlotte over the line into York County, South Carolina. They're talking about incentives, about $115 million bucks worth of incentives to try to do this. And now you have some state legislators in South Carolina kind of saying, hey, wait a second, we're not so sure about this.
Right. Well, there's a huge debate about what's going to happen with the Panthers, because the new owner of the Panthers, David Tepper, very much wants the area around Bank of America Stadium to be such that with renovations and the like, you could host an event like an NCAA Final Four or a Super Bowl. And right now, you can't do that given the facility that exists there. For one thing, there's not a roof on the stadium, and there are other sorts of things going on. And so South Carolina is trying to lure the business operations away from B of A to an area just across the line. And this team always says, we are two Carolinas but one team. And there's a move forward to give about $115 million in state incentives to the Panthers to do that. And if you move the operations away from Bank of America Stadium, there might be room to expand the stadium and actually do what David Tepper would like to do. And I'm sure Charlotte would come forward and throw some money at him, even though he's a billionaire. But the issue more for South Carolina is that you've got some senators led by Dick Harpootlian, a Democrat, whose his family's been very active in South Carolina politics for a long time, saying, wait a minute, these incentive deals aren't what they're cracked up to be. And at a minimum, if we can't stop this deal, which they're trying to do, we want our state auditors to look at all the incentive deals we've done over the past 10 years and see what the state's actually gotten out of the deal, because we are pretty sure that they haven't delivered what was promised.
You know, that's a fascinating question, and good for them. And hopefully they'll go forward and try to figure out the answer to that. Here in North Carolina, that'd be a great question to be asked as well.
Well, sure, absolutely. I mean, if there were some – I mean, and I think that it's a possibility to do something like that, to have some sort of enabling legislation which says we're going to start looking back exactly at these incentive deals and see what the taxpayers have gotten for the money they've given away.
We've been talking with Rick Henderson. He is editor-in-chief of Carolina Journal about this issue of incentives. Rick, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Much more Carolina Journal Radio to come in just a moment.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air, and on the web, you can find the information you need at CarolinaJournal.com. Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. North Carolina government has made plenty of promises to its workers and retirees. Our next guest devotes much of his time to focusing on the price of those promises. Dale Falwell is the elected state treasurer of North Carolina. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, and hello to your listeners.
This is a big issue, isn't it? The price of all of these promises that over the years state government has made to workers for government and the retirees who've left service. Why is this something to focus on?
Well, it's something to focus on because it's not emotional, it's not political, it's mathematical. And it's not just me that's focusing on this. This is Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, who over 7 years ago said the following: the single biggest threat to public education is how states account and fund their unfunded health care and pension obligations to public service workers. So these issues are happening not because I'm the state treasurer, but because this is mathematically where we are. And just very generally, your listeners don't wake up thinking about life expectancies, unfunded liabilities, AAA bond ratings. But all of these things matter when the state is trying to be solvent and trying to fulfill their obligations of health care and pension to public service workers.
Yeah, some people are going to hear the topic and the eyes will glaze over and say, oh, you know, this is something that's that policy wonks or people like the state treasurer need to focus on.
Right.
Why do they need to know that this is something important that has to be addressed?
Well, we always categorize this as why should you care? And the reason you should care is that your listeners, you know, get up in the morning thinking about how we're going to best educate our kids, how are we going to protect ourselves from crime, how are we going to pave our roads and all the other core functions of our state government. I can certify to you as the state treasurer that all those things that your listeners wake up thinking about are going to be negatively impacted over the next 20 years based on the tremendous and rising cost of health care and pension obligations coming out of the state budget. And this is something that's going on, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring this to the attention of obviously the policymakers and your listeners, but also to let them know that we're not there at the treasurer's office just to run the public purse. We're there to try to find and fix these problems. And fixing it means putting it on a path to where this is sustainable. You know, the last thing that a school teacher or highway patrolman should be worried about when they leave their house every day is how safe and secure my pension and health care a benefit is, and we're trying to make sure that we're good stewards of the public purse.
We are chatting with Dale Falwell. He is the state treasurer of North Carolina. Some people who might be following this issue will say, well, you know, I haven't really heard that there's any problem with the pension system or the health care system. I thought our budget in North Carolina was in pretty good shape. Are they wrong?
They are correct. North Carolina has one of 14 states that has a AAA bond rating right now. And the reason we have a AAA bond rating is that because of the conservative policies of the General Assembly, the state budget has been running surpluses for the last several years. We have one of the strongest rainy day trust funds in the United States, one of the strongest unemployment trust funds in the United States, so that we could weather the next recession. But these unfunded liabilities total nearly $50 billion. I brought a report here, Mitch, from 39 years ago from former Treasurer Harlan Bowles, who said that these unfunded liabilities, though little understood, will eventually equal, surpass, and then dwarf the amount of debt the state has outstanding. Right now, we have about $5 billion of debt, nearly $50 billion of unfunded liabilities. The pension is one of the best funded in the United States. It's about 90% funded. South Carolina's pension plan's 50% funded. One of the Kentucky systems is 32% funded. But the pension has about a $14 billion unfundedness to it. And the reason is that it has not achieved its assumed rate of return on average for 21 years. But then you go to the health side, and our unfunded health care liability is one of the, makes it right behind Illinois. Our state health plan, unlike the pension plan, is only 4% funded. And our liability in relation to the size of our state puts us right behind Illinois, the same Illinois that your listeners have been hearing about, as it being in such a dire situation.
So we've got these situations that are unsustainable going forward. Mm-hmm. What do we have to do now to get us on the right path?
Well, what we have to do is it's a military term, but it's called II. And a lot of people have heard that word all their life, but very few know what it means. II means I hear what you've told me, I understand what you're trying to say, and I will do something about that. So on the pension side, what we're trying to do is make sure money's not leaving the plan unnecessarily. And I don't say this in an inelegant way, but the stock market doesn't care what the treasurer's needs are for the pension plan or any of your listeners. But at the end of the day, what we do is focus on money not leaving the plan when it's not supposed to. Number one is Wall Street fees, which we're on a four-year run rate right now to cut over $400 million just in Wall Street fees. Secondly, we're making sure we're not sending pension checks to people whose the actual pensioner is deceased. There's somebody who's currently on trial for cashing his deceased mother's pension check for 16 years. And other kinds of things, the felony forfeiture law for people who commit crimes while on public service duty and the like. On the healthcare side, what we're doing is much like the Wall Street side, is we're going to take advantage of our largeness. It's inexplainable that the largest purchaser of healthcare in North Carolina can't purchase healthcare better and more efficiently than anyone else can. And to personalize this, the reason that your listeners should care about this is that for the beginning teacher, the beginning trooper in North Carolina, in order to access the family premium, they have to work 1 week out of the work month. That is unacceptable as the largest purchaser of this product in this state.
You also mentioned, and we have a little bit more time to talk about it, debt as well. So in addition to these unfunded liabilities, North Carolina has a lot of debt. You've been focusing on that as well.
Yeah, we have the Debt Affordability Committee, which I'm the chair of. And the Debt Affordability Study was something that was put into law about 15 years ago. And no pun intended, it was meant to be a governor in the verb sense, so that the treasurer could communicate directly with the governor who produces a budget and the General Assembly who also produces a budget to let them know what our debt ceilings are and how much ability do we have to borrow debt. And so we've had the Connect NC bonds, the Build NC initiative. So we're wanting to make sure that we manage our debt so that we can afford the interest on the debt in addition to the health care and pension obligations.
Well, they are certainly very important issues for us to keep up with. And one person who's keeping his eye on that ball, as always, is our state treasurer, Dale Falwell. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have more on Carolina Journal Radio in just a moment.
If you love freedom, we've got great news to share with you. Now you can find the latest news, views, and research from conservative groups across North Carolina all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. It's one-stop shopping for North Carolina's freedom movement. At NorthCarolinaConservative.com, you'll find links to John Locke Foundation blogs on the day's news, CarolinaJournal.com reporting and quick takes, Carolina Journal radio interviews, TV interviews featuring CJ reporters and Locke Foundation analysts, opinion pieces and reports on higher education from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal, commentary and polling data from the Civitas Institute, and news and views from the North Carolina Family Policy Council. That's right, all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. That's North Carolina spelled out, conservative.com. NorthCarolinaConservative.com. Try it today.
North Carolina is changing, not just day to day, but hour to hour, minute to minute, even second to second. How can you keep up with the changes, especially the ones that affect you, your family, your home, your job? Make the John Locke Foundation and Carolina Journal part of your social media diet. On Facebook, like the John Locke Foundation, like Carolina Journal. Follow us on Twitter, at John Locke NC and at Carolina Journal. News, insights, and analysis you'll find nowhere else. Thanks to the experts at the John Locke Foundation, and thanks to the first-class investigative reporting of Carolina Journal. Don't wait for the morning newspaper. Don't wait for the evening news. If it's happening now, it's happening here. The John Locke Foundation and Carolina Journal have you covered with up-to-the-second information. Like us on Facebook, the John Locke Foundation, and Carolina Journal. Follow us on Twitter, at John Locke NC and at Carolina Journal.
Did you know you can now advance freedom and free markets just by shopping with Amazon? It's true. Online shopping is now a great way to support the John Locke Foundation. Just shop using the Amazon Smile program and designate us, the Locke Foundation, to receive a portion of your purchase amount. That's right. You shop and Amazon donates money to us, the John Locke Foundation. So here's how it works. Log on to smile.amazon.com. Amazon Smile, it's the same Amazon you know. Same products, same prices. But here's what's better. Amazon donates 0.5% of the price of your eligible purchases to us, the John Locke Foundation. So try it. Be sure to designate the Locke Foundation as the nonprofit you want to support. It's that easy. So now, not only will you enjoy what you buy, you'll also support freedom. Don't forget, log on to smile.amazon.com today. Buy something nice and help defend freedom. Help support the John Locke Foundation.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokine. Some North Carolina lawmakers want to expand the state's Medicaid program, but critics say that expansion would divert money from the people who need it most. Republican State Senator Joyce Krawczyk explains.
Within the last 15 years, our Medicaid enrollees, that population has grown by a million. At the same time, we have had a 28% decrease in providers who service that population. So we need more access to care, and that's a priority for us on the Senate side. Health policy reform should be measured by a patient's access to quality, affordable health care.
Kravick co-sponsors the Health Care Expansion Act.
The first thing that the Health Care Act will do is provide $41 million to fund 2,000 slots of the intellectual developmental disability population, the Medicaid program list. Many of these families have been waiting. The average wait time has been 7 years. So that is crucial that we get the services to these people who need it. Currently, there are about 12,000 that are being served in North Carolina. And there's another 12,000 on that waiting list. The IDD Medicaid program, for those of you who don't know, it offers personal care services and other in-home assistance to individuals with severe intellectual developmental needs, and they're unable to care for themselves. They have an array of disabilities, including spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, and a number of other diagnoses. It frees up their family to provide for them, for their loved ones. By funding more slots on the IDD wait list, we'll be changing the lives of thousands of families across North Carolina. I understand that expanding Medicaid is a top agenda for many, but let's give some thought to what that actually means. Medicaid expansion means taxpayer-fund health insurance for able-bodied, childless adults. That is most of that expansion population. To us, this IDD population, these folks that have been waiting for a number of years who have severe needs, should always be put ahead of able-bodied working adults. They deserve to be at the head of the list. We're here to make sure that they're taken care of. And until all of the truly needy on that IDD list are taken care of, we should not even be considering expanding Medicaid, because it will, states that have expanded, we have already seen how it has caused services to be lost to this truly needy population.
That's State Senator Joyce Kravic, Republican from Forsyth County. She's explaining a key piece of the proposed Health Care Expansion Act. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
We're doubling down on freedom. At Carolina Journal Radio, we're proud to bring you stories that impact your life and your wallet. And now, get twice as much freedom when you also listen to our podcast, Headlock, available on iTunes and at johnlock.org/podcast. Now, Headlock is a little bit different. It's a no-holds-barred discussion that challenges soft-headed ideas from the left and the right. But like Carolina Journal Radio, Headlock is smart and timely. But with Headlock, you'll hear more about the culture wars, and you'll get some more humor as well. We guarantee great information and a good time. Double down with us, listen to Carolina Journal Radio each week, and listen to Headlock, too. Remember, you can listen to Headlock at johnlock.org/podcast, or subscribe or download each week at iTunes. Carolina Journal Radio and Headlock, just what you need to stay informed and stay entertained. Both brought to you in the name of freedom by the John Locke Foundation.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. Members of the University of North Carolina's Board of Governors continue to ask questions about rising tuition and fee costs. Member Tom Goolsbee broached the topic during a recent meeting.
My concern is, of course, folks graduating with law degrees on average are about $110,000 in debt. Folks with medical degrees are leaving school with debts of about $200,000. Overall, we've increased, I believe, in the over 10 years now on the board, the cost of tuition and fees double. Student debt is crushing students, not only in North Carolina, but across the United States, at, I think, about $1.5 trillion. The only thing that's more weight on graduates is mortgages. Student debt is something that we're all concerned about, and we've watched it double in the last 10 years as our tuition and fees have doubled. I hope that we will continue to work hard to keep tuition costs in check. Our university system is supposed to be as free as possible, and I do have concerns about the debt that students, as I know all of you do.
Goolsbee raised additional questions about growing levels of student debt.
I would also ask us to think, as we go forward and student debt becomes more and more of a problem for people, particularly our millennials, as they leave school. We've seen student debt in the last 10 years on average, 13 years on average, go from about $20,000 to about $40,000 for students across the United States. And I think it's time that we consider our universities co-signing the loans with these students. I don't know if many of you had a chance to share. I shared with several of you a recent editorial I heard by Tucker Carlson on this issue, and I thought that he made a very good point. There are a lot of very successful business people in this room who've done quite well in business, and you know that in business, many times, well, most of the time, when you enter contracts with people, they're joint ventures and you both take the risks. Right now, it's just our students take the risks. If they get a degree that's worthless, or if they get accepted to a program that they don't have the skills for and flunk out, they're still stuck with that debt. If they do get a job that's worthwhile and are able to pay it back, that's great. The university system wins, the students win. But I think it's time for us to seriously consider our university co-signing the debt with these students, which would hold us accountable, so that the people we let into our system, we really have a vested interest in seeing that they succeed. I think it's past time for us to consider doing that, and I hope as we move forward that we make such a decision. I think it's proper. I think it puts us in the same shoes as these students, who many have overwhelming debt, and it would help us keep the cost down and focus on what's really important, as we've already recognized, which is student graduation rates and student success. It puts us in their shoes and holds us just as accountable as they are.
Board Member Temple Sloan responded to Goolsbee's concerns.
Nobody could agree with you more than this board. Nobody could agree with everything you just said more than the Budget and Finance Committee. And Governor Goolsbee, up until 2 years ago, the Budget and Finance Committee did not review graduate school or out-of-state tuition. And not only now do we challenge in-state undergraduate tuition, we review and challenge graduate school, in-state graduate school, and all out-of-state graduate tuitions as well. So your comments are very well intended and very well accepted. Thank you.
In addition to tuition, Board Member Steve Long asked Board Chairman Harry Smith and others to focus on rising student fees.
Mr. Chairman, I've said to you several times that parents are, and me included, are feed up.
We've heard you.
And I think, and I look here, the campus security fee is one of the fees here. And those of you who are not part of the history, when President Ross was here, the campuses needed money to increase salaries for our law enforcement officers. And I believe absolutely we should be competitive with our law enforcement officers, because all of us at this board really, really appreciate all that they do, especially, I know, for us and for other people in the campuses. But I would hope that the committee would look at transitioning that fee to tuition. And because there's some things that I think should not be fees, and we've kind of gone into this trend where, well, hey, if we need some money, let's put a make it a fee. And I think we need to put our operating costs more in tuition than in fees. So I would hope that the committee would at some point look at that, because we really ought to spend a lot of time, I think, on fees, looking at fees and philosophically what goes into a fee as opposed to tuition.
Board Member Tom Fetzer piped in.
To Mr. Long's point, when the Budget and Finance Committee was reviewing all the fee increase requests from the campuses, there was not a single request from any of the campuses for an increase in the campus security fee, which was interesting to me. Do all the campuses feel like they have sufficient security on campus to secure student safety? Lots of requests for increase in the athletic fees and other fees. To the parents, as you said, fees and tuition are indistinguishable. They write one check. And while we're doing a good line of holding the line on tuition, August a year ago, this board, I think, nearly unanimously passed a resolution to ask the institutions to reduce tuitions and fees, if at all practical. So the fees continue to go up, even with a 3% cap. Over 10 years, that gets to be a pretty big number for parents. And so we've got to admonish and encourage the institutions to look at fees and tuition holistically. That's one number to a parent, and it needs to come down.
Board members David Powers and Steve Long debated the merits of dropping fees in return for higher tuition rates in certain university programs.
Particularly as it relates to a lot of the special fees, the program-oriented fees, things like the engineering fee at North Carolina State or the business school fee at UNC Chapel Hill. I think differentiated tuition for programs like this as opposed to a fee is a much better way. One, it gives the school more flexibility in how they can expend the money. I know there's been a lot of resistance to differentiated tuition, but I think it's time for us to really take a look at that, particularly when it involves those program-specific fees. I think it's really something we ought to study and consider finding a way to make a switch.
I agree with Mr. Powers on that. You know, there is a two-sided argument. You can't go too overboard because you don't want, you know, the teaching degree to get a very low tuition, but the engineering degree to get a very high tuition. So you definitely don't want to go too overboard on that. But I do agree with you on some of these specialized programs.
My response to that, if I may, is why not? Why can't a teaching degree be a lot less expensive than an engineering degree? Because, you know, when you look at, I'm looking at this from an investment standpoint, and for me, it's a great lesson. The thing I was willing to champion the business school fee at Chapel Hill is because they were asking a student to spend $4,000 more during their tenure and to make $23,000 a year on average more for the rest of their working career. It's a pretty good lesson for a young person to learn about economics. So I don't really have a problem with an engineering degree or a business degree or a potentially high-earning degree being more expensive than a teaching degree. As the husband of a teacher and the son of a teacher, I know how thankless that profession can be, and the financial rewards are not very strong. So I don't have a big problem with that, quite frankly.
That interchange between David Powers and Steve Long made up part of the UNC Board of Governors' latest debate about university tuition and fees. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
A commitment to truth and transparency in government. That is the mission of Carolina Journal, and we are proud to deliver. And now, proud to tell you, the North Carolina Press Association has honored two members of our team with awards for reporting and writing. That's right, we really do deliver award-winning journalism. We shine the light on government spending, reveal the truth about boondoggles, and dig deep into programs paid for with your tax money. We keep you in the know in a way other media outlets don't. And our reach and influence are growing. Through all of our outlets, we reach more than 1 million North Carolinians each month. So make sure you're one of them. Our monthly print edition arrives in your mailbox every month. Our online daily news site, CarolinaJournal.com, has fresh stories, opinion pieces, and more. The award-winning Carolina Journal team, our reporters make government accountable to you. Call 1-866-JLF-INFO for your free subscription. Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Donna Martinez. North Carolina each year has millions less than it needs to maintain our roads and bridges. So the question, of course, is what do we do about that? Well, there are people who are looking at that issue. One of them is Joe Coletti, who is a John Locke Foundation Senior Fellow. Now, recently, Joe testified before a North Carolina Board of Transportation committee to help guide officials to sound tax principles when they're making their decisions about transportation funding. Joe joins us now to talk about those principles. Joe, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
First of all, people might be shocked, actually, to hear that, oh my gosh, you mean each year we're not adequately maintaining our roads and bridges? So what gives?
Yeah, the state spends $5 billion on transportation from, and the money comes from a number of sources. But half of that money goes to construction and about $1.4 billion a year goes to maintain our existing roads and bridges, those that are that the state owns. But from what we've seen, there's about a $2 billion need. So you end up short a fair number of times, and that's part of where the Board of Transportation is looking at how do we reform our road funding so that we can meet these needs and the new construction needs that the state has.
Does that mean that our roads and bridges are unsafe?
No. Actually, North Carolina does really well on most of the national rankings of bridge safety, road condition. And part of that is that a few years ago, we started prioritizing what gets built in the construction that happens, took a lot of those decisions away from political decisions and put them into engineers' hands. And so we have a ranking system, and we're taking care of those highest needs earlier. And so the condition of our roads and bridges is actually in good shape, but trying to get ahead of that and actually keep them from falling into bad shape is where the maintenance comes in.
You know, as I drive around, Joe, one thing that I see is a lot of people who are now driving hybrids, or some people right. driving electric vehicles as well. So you have the big question about the way we fund our roads, first of all, and does that mean that through advances in technology and maybe changing consumer behavior, are we taking in less money? Is that part of the issue here?
The improving fuel economy of cars is a significant part of what's going on. And it's not just hybrids and electric vehicles, which are still a small portion of the fleet of vehicles on the road, but cars in general have gotten are much more fuel efficient than they were. You can get 30 miles per gallon on a car that used to get 24, and on trucks that used to get 24 that used to get 18, they're up to 24, and even at heavy duty vehicles are doubling their fuel efficiency.
So we're filling up with less gas, and the gas tax is part of the funding mechanism.
A significant portion of our funding mechanism is the biggest portion is actually the gas tax, and there was some reform on that side as well. In 2015, there was the gas tax was supposed to fall by about 7 cents, and instead the legislature converted what was a ceiling into a floor, and there's some allowance for it to adjust with inflation, but the gas tax is a fraction of what it was years ago when it was an inflation adjusted terms about $1.20, and it's about 37 cents now.
So state officials, transportation officials have a interesting set of challenges ahead as they try to make sure that everything continues to be safe and that the maintenance occurs, the building occurs, et cetera. So you had been invited to speak before a Board of Transportation committee about this to give them a little bit of guidance. And you set out essentially some core principles that you believe are vital for them to follow. The first one was identify core needs. Help us understand.
Yeah, so that goes to the engineering question before of what is it that we need in the state, and the new construction plan helps identify those new needs, but there should be a look back at what we already have, because North Carolina has more state maintained roads than just about any other state in the country, and we probably have more roads and more overdeveloped roads than we need. And so looking ahead at what is it that we really need, do we need four-lane roads connecting places that have almost no traffic on them versus do we need toll roads in places where there is heavy traffic and where you can pay for those things?
Sounds like looking at growth areas and then also looking at maybe congestion pockets, et cetera.
Right.
And that wasn't being done before, apparently.
Right. That's what the engineering plan, the reform provided more of that, but now looking back at the existing roads that we have, and especially on the maintenance side, should we be maintaining all the roads that we have to the level that we're maintaining them, or should we allow some degradation to happen naturally?
So you also talked with the committee about how we're going to pay for whatever it is that they determine is the legitimate need for roads and bridges, et cetera. And you used an interesting phrase, which really piqued my interest. You said, make the user pay.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It's essentially how we do roads already, which is a great thing with how we've been able to maintain the roads that we have so far. That when you buy a car, unlike if you're using public transportation, your user, the fare that you pay on the bus is the only part that you pay. Everything else comes out of taxes. But if you're using your own vehicle, you've paid for the car. So you've paid for the equivalent of the bus itself. You have the title. You have the property tax. You have all of the pieces of that already. And then you pay the gas tax. And so we should keep that essential framework. And now the question is that gas tax, the variable part of all of that, is it the right way to fund it? And part of that is that with fuel efficiency improvements, probably not. We should take a look at what's the weight of the vehicle and how far are you driving so that you're getting to the gas tax was originally intended to be how much wear are you putting on the road? And it works pretty well, right?
Sounds like it's much more personalized, individualized to your individual impact on the road system versus some sort of an aggregate.
Exactly. And so if fuel efficiency is improving that much, then you have to figure out is there a better way to get that weight and mileage equivalent and charge people based on that.
Okay, so based on that idea alone, Joe, I bet there's going to be pushback on that idea because that could mean that some people, if they're having a greater impact than they're now paying, they would be paying more.
The biggest impact is likely going to be on those hybrids and electric vehicles.
Really?
The which other right way? Now, which right now don't pay, right? If you have a hybrid, you're paying a fraction of the gas that you that somebody with an equivalent size vehicle was using. If you have an electric, you're paying no gas tax. But if you're driving a heavy, if you're driving a large pickup, if you're driving a van, if you're driving a you know a large a commercial vehicle, you're probably already there's some equivalent that you're already paying in the gas tax because it's not as fuel efficient, even if it's more fuel efficient than it was. So there's still going to be that part is already embedded in the gas tax that they're paying. It's just a question of how do you calculate that and how do we make sure that that's right.
And Joe, lastly, you recommended this, subsidize the person, not the system. Yeah. What did you mean by that?
Well, that is like public transit where you pay your fare, which doesn't cover the whole cost. We should take a look at, should we be subsidizing individuals in their use of a vehicle? Should we allow them to use some money to purchase a vehicle and take care of that with a subsidy or use Uber or something like that to meet their individual needs instead of having a system of buses that are half full or a fraction or a fractional use?
It's a very interesting idea, particularly with the massive growth in the ride-sharing industry. Joe Coletti is Senior Fellow with the John Locke Foundation. It's a really interesting piece. You can read it at johnlocke.org. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Donna.
That's all the time we have for the program this week. Thank you for listening. On behalf of my co-host, Mitch Kokai, I'm Donna Martinez. Hope you'll join us next week for more Carolina Journal Radio.
Carolina Journal Radio is a program of the John Locke Foundation. To learn more about the John Locke Foundation, including donations that support programs like Carolina Journal Radio, send email to development@johnlocke.org or call 1-866-JLF-INFO. That's 1-866-553-4636.
Carolina Journal Radio is a co-production of the John Locke Foundation, North Carolina's free market think tank, and Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated. All opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of advertisers or the station. For more information about the show or other programs and services of the John Locke Foundation, visit johnlocke.org or call us toll-free at 866-JLF-INFO. We'd like to thank our wonderful radio affiliates across North Carolina and our sponsors. From all of us at Carolina Journal Radio, thank you for listening, and please join us again next week.